coming up on this week's mini-episode of the Broken Brain Podcast.
So Alzheimer's disease is the most common form of dementia on the planet, affecting close to 6 million people in the United States alone. But almost two-thirds of all these people are actually women.
Hey everyone, it's Drew. I want to give a quick shout out to my new venture pharmacy and our latest product launch, the Pegan Shake. How you start your morning sets the tone for the day. I'm a huge fan of morning routines because I think they can transform your ability to focus, sleep well, and get the most out of your day, especially in this busy modern world. But I often hear from people from this podcast, my friends, who feel like they don't know how to start the day off to set themselves up for success. What I've found is one of the best ways to begin your day is to feed your body the right information or the right nutrients. First, you want to set an intention for the day, practice some mindfulness, but then you want to feed your body the right information and the right nutrients. That's why Dr. Hyman and I created the Pegan Shake in our latest venture, Pharmacy. It's a nutritionally packed morning blend that's designed to support healthy blood sugar, energy, and brain power. It features some of my most favorite brain-boosting foods like MCT and avocado oil. It also features organic acacia fiber for healthy gut function, grass-fed collagen, and organic pumpkin and pea protein to support muscle synthesis. There's never been a shake like this on the market. That's literally why we created it, because we couldn't find anything like it. I think you're going to love it. Check it out at getpharmacy.com. That's G-E-T, pharmacy with an F, pharmacy.com/PeganShake. Now let's get back to today's episode. Hi everyone, Drew Prode here, host of the Broken Brain Podcast. Did you know that many leading experts and doctors now consider that Alzheimer's disease is largely preventable disease and not just a disease of old age that we all can expect to get? We tend to associate Alzheimer's with the elderly because that's when clinical symptoms manifest. But in reality, Alzheimer's begins. Same thing with cognitive decline. Alzheimer's and cognitive decline begin with negative changes in the brain at least decades prior, more often than not in middle age. In this mini episode, I speak with Dr. David Perlmutter, Dr. Lisa Moscone, Dr. Dale Bredesen about why Alzheimer's is a preventable disease and the lifestyle factors that can set the stage for Alzheimer's years from now. We also talk about the statistics of Alzheimer's disease and its impact on women and what you can do today to prevent cognitive decline in the future. Let's listen in, starting with my interview with Dr. David Perlmutter, a board-certified neurologist and four-time New York Times bestselling author.
We do know that, A, for the most part, Alzheimer's is a preventable disease. This is a disease costing Americans $230 billion, affecting 5.4 million of us, that is dramatically exploding in terms of its incidence and prevalence globally. And yet, you know, the notion that our lifestyle choices are not relevant is, it does take my breath away. You know, it's all about living a life that is less inflammatory. And that certainly transcends our narrative as it relates to Alzheimer's, but involves Parkinson's, it involves coronary artery disease, diabetes, and cancer, and all of the chronic degenerative conditions. And, you know, what really is so very important, and I think sort of stands in our way of getting this information to really have traction, is the timetable that this is effective over. For example, you tell somebody, wear your seatbelt, that'll be good for you. They get in a car accident, they're wearing their seatbelt, and they say, hey, I get it. That worked. Yesterday, I was in that accident. It worked. But the inflammation issues that are relevant in terms of causing the brain to degenerate or narrowing the coronary arteries, these are issues that are beginning to take shape 10, 20, 30 years prior to actual disease manifestation. And therefore, it makes it very challenging for the consumer to connect those dots. Let me give you an example. Last year in the journal Neurology, which is arguably one of our most well-respected neurology journals on the planet, peer-reviewed, there was an interesting study that was published, and it measured in a group of several thousand individuals who were in their 40s and 50s at the time. It measured markers in their blood of inflammation. And the study then came back and looked at the same group of individuals 24 years later. the study again was just published. And what it found was really quite remarkable. There was this very direct relationship between risk for developing Alzheimer's disease and having had higher measurement of blood inflammatory markers 24 years ago. So what does it say? It says that if you have elevated markers of inflammation in your blood today, you are setting the stage for Alzheimer's years from now. And so that your lifestyle choices today, whether you choose to eat low carb, high fat, low fat, whether you choose sedentarity versus physical activity, the amount of sleep that you get, and hopefully that is restorative, the amount of stress in your life, etc. These are all extremely important variables over which you have control that clearly are connected to your brain's destiny. This is not live your life come what may and we have a pill for you if you're suddenly cognitively impaired. It is the other story. The story is that you make lifestyle choices today that will dramatically impact how your brain works 2-3 decades from now.
Did you know that 2 out of every 3 Alzheimer's patients are women? Today, Alzheimer's is as real a threat to women's health as breast cancer is. A 45-year-old woman has 1 in 5 chance of developing Alzheimer's during the remaining of her life, while a man of the same age only has 1 out of 10 chance. Why is that? Dr. Lisa Moscone, the director of the Women's Brain Initiative and associate director of the Alzheimer's Prevention Clinic at the Weill Cornell Medical College, and author of Brain Food and the XX Brain, talks to us about what happens to women and not to men in middle life that could potentially initiate the early signs that would develop into Alzheimer's.
So Alzheimer's disease is the most common form of dementia on the planet, affecting close to 6 million people in the United States alone. But almost 2/3 of all these people are actually women. So for every man suffering from Alzheimer's, there are 2 women. And that's on top of the higher risk of anxiety and depression, or multiple sclerosis, or meningiomas, like you mentioned, which are the most common brain tumors. Women are also much more likely to die of a stroke. If a stroke takes place, we're more likely to have aneurysms as we go through menopause, especially. And Alzheimer's is just, it's enormous. There are so many people with Alzheimer's, and if we don't find a solution, then the rates of Alzheimer's disease are going to triple by the year 2050, with a projected 15 million patients in the United States alone, which is, for context, the populations of New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles put together. So it's an enormous amount of people, and 2/3 of all those people might end up being women.
Yeah, you said before in a talk that I watched in preparation of this interview, you say just because we're living longer, it doesn't necessarily mean that we're always living healthier.
Yes, and that's actually also the problem we have in Alzheimer's disease. Then, for many years, I was trying to study this gender disparity in Alzheimer's, and people would just say to me, well, you know, that's just because women live longer, right? So Alzheimer's disease is a disease of old age, and women live longer, so it goes without saying that you get Alzheimer's more, and that's the end of it.
Right, you know, that was like, the conclusion that was accepted in science for a long time.
For a really long time, and things are starting to change dramatically, finally, in part because we now understand that Alzheimer's is not a disease of old age. So we associate Alzheimer's with the elderly because the symptoms of Alzheimer's emerge when people are older, usually in their 70s. But in reality, Alzheimer's disease starts with negative changes in the brain years, if not decades, prior to clinical symptoms. So we started to look at that midlife. Midlife seems to be when these brain changes really start taking place. And so since my background is in brain imaging, I have a PhD in neuroscience, but also in nuclear medicine. So I do brain scans for a living, physically, and in my lab, and with the Women's Brain Initiative, we do brain scans on all of our participants. And we started going younger and younger. When I started, we were looking at patients who were like 65, maybe 70. And then I was like, well, you know, we have to really start looking at people who are like in their 40s. And so now we have hundreds and hundreds of participants who are like 40 to 65, for example. And we did brain scans on all of them. And then we compared the brains of men and women, and we showed that women's brains in midlife look much more Alzheimer-ish than men's brains, which means, in other words, that women with a predisposition to Alzheimer's disease start developing Alzheimer's earlier than men do.
What we call Alzheimer's disease is actually a protective response to a wide variety of insults to the brain: inflammation, insulin resistance, toxins, infections, and inadequate levels of nutrients, hormones, and growth factors. Dr. Dale Bredesen, an internationally recognized expert in the mechanisms of neurodegenerative diseases, professor at UCLA, chief science officer at Apollo Health, and the author of The End of Alzheimer's, talks to us about the importance of restorative sleep, targeted supplementation, exercise, and brain training for the prevention of cognitive decline. Let's listen in. Part of the book, The End of Alzheimer's program, is helping people get clear on maybe where they can get started first for them. So how do people think about that? When you're talking to people who are about to embark the program, how are they beginning to lay out the chips and at least even start where, at least decide where to get started?
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, you can think of this like, you know, you're sitting in your home, for example, and, you know, there's a fire out there and it's advancing toward you. Well, if you can put it out when it's out there and kind of push it back, then in fact, it's less likely to come to your house. Once it gets to your house, you know, you've got a lot of things to do, but you can get rid of it while it's out there, at least beat it back and really buy yourself, you know, decades potentially. We should have people who are, you know, good cognition until they're 100. So you can get started a number of ways. There's the basics, and then there are the things that are targeted. On the basics, there is diet, exercise, sleep, stress, brain training, basic detox, and some basic supplements. So those, what we think of as kind of the seven core features, and we talk about these in the book as well. So just getting yourself into a plant-rich, mild ketotic diet with some fasting. You know, fasting has turned out to be so remarkably helpful for everything from hypertension to cognition to preventing, helping in the prevention of Alzheimer's disease, to, you know, improving vascular status, improving insulin sensitivity, you know, on and on and on. So just doing basics like that, and we go into great detail in the book for specific things to buy, specific things for the so-called KetoFlex 12-3 diet, then exercise, just basic things with both strength training and aerobic training, sleep. As I mentioned, that may be the most overlooked. People don't bother to check to see if they have nocturnal hypoxia, and it's incredibly common.
And then the best way to check that is through a sleep center.
You can do it. Yeah, actually, it's pretty easy now. You can actually do, just get yourself an oximeter. And there are a number of good oximeters out there that can actually record for you your oxygenation. So again, this is something more and more health we're seeing as quantified self. You know, now you can have your Apple Watch and you can look at things. You can look at your heart rate. You can look at your oxygen saturation. And by the way, you can look at your oxygen saturation, you know, at a moment's notice with your iPhone. That's simple to do. But if you want to record it all night, you want to have an oximeter. And yes, you can get this from your doctor. You can, as you said, you can do a sleep study, but you can also do it more simply by just recording it with an oximeter and then see if you're dropping below that target of 96% to 98%. And then again, stress. Incredible. As you know, there are now spikes. And when I got an interesting email from a neurologist yesterday who's seeing a spike in her practice, looking at people with cognitive decline. Everyone's anxious. Everyone's stressed out. Everyone's indoors. Everybody's depressed and worried. There's so much going on in the world right now. And of course, this contributes to everything from hypertension to cognitive decline. So getting that, again, as a scientist, I never thought I would be talking about things like meditation. I thought this is, you know, not helpful. And yet I can't deny the statistics are there. The publications are there. Neuroplasticity is undoubtedly enhanced with forms of meditation like TM, like mindfulness, like things like that. So this is really important. And then brain training. Again, each one of these things isolated doesn't have a huge impact. But as part of an overall program, these are getting you over that hump. These are making it so that you are now on the right side of plasticity, so that you are able to lay down and keep new synapses. And then some basic detox. And I'm, you know, I'm learning this myself with detoxing myself with during the COVID-19. One of the things I started doing was using chronometer a lot more. So I'm looking every day at what I'm doing right, what I'm doing wrong, how much fiber I have, how much protein I have, all these sorts of things. And critical to that is getting appropriate fiber, which turns out to be so helpful for detox, among other things, for improving your glycemic load from various foods and things like that, improving your insulin sensitivity, and to improving your lipid numbers. So these things are all helpful. And then basic things like filtered water, sweating frequently, following up with non-emollient soaps and things like that, or non-toxic soaps. All of these things critical for keeping your toxin level low. HEPA filters, I encourage people, especially if there's any question about molds, of course you want to have remediation, but also you want to have a HEPA filter. Improve the air where you are living. You know, it will be helpful. And you mentioned earlier, people get overwhelmed. Just to know, if you have water intrusion in your home, if you have a history of water damage, you're likely to have some mold issues. If you've truly had, from the very beginning, there's never been any water intrusion, which is relatively uncommon. Most of us have had some of that. Then you're probably in pretty good shape. But if you've ever had any water damage, and we have people, by the way, who will start to get better and then have a leak in their home, and literally they can tell, their cognition will signal the leak in the home faster than the spouse will find it, so that they will actually go downhill within 24 hours. And then they'll start looking, oh yeah, here's new water intrusion that we were unaware of. So this is a surprising and important correlation. So these are some of the basic things that you can use to get started. And there are some basic supplements. I know Mark talks about these a lot, but even, you know, things that look at things like your insulin sensitivity, some, you know, basic detox, making sure that you have enough. And I would say one of the common ones that people leave out is choline. Males should have about 550 milligrams per day of choline or more. Females, 450 milligrams or more. And we talk about this in the book. And I find that just about every day, I am a little on the low side with choline. We don't tend to get as much choline as we should.
And most people the choline that they're getting is through like eggs?
Occasionally some eggs, some liver, things like that. And so, yeah, we need to do a better job of that. And that's you can certainly support that, not only with things like pastured eggs and stuff, but also with things like citicoline or with GPC choline. Some easy ways to get yourself to make sure that you're getting that 550 milligrams, or if you're female, 450 milligrams. Most of us are low. And of course, this is the precursor for acetylcholine, which is the most important neurotransmitter for storing memory and making memory. So you need appropriate acetylcholine. You also need appropriate glutamate for getting the appropriate memories. And there are other pieces to this as well, you know, such as noradrenaline, norepinephrine, which are key for level of attention and level of consciousness. And then things like dopamine, which of course are important for that reward feeling. So all of these work together, but acetylcholine is the most important one. And of course, this is why people take Aricept, which inhibits breakdown of acetylcholine, to give themselves that little boost when they have Alzheimer's disease. But of course, it doesn't work by itself terribly well. So I encourage everybody, please make sure that you are not choline deficient. Make sure that you are not vitamin D deficient. You know, make sure that you are not deficient in important hormones and trophic factors that are critical for laying down and keeping memory storage. And then beyond that, you want to do targeting. As we said earlier, you know, looking at the key things that are driving this. If you've got toxins around that you're unaware of, which so many of us do, let's find out, you know, before the fire gets to your house, let's find out, because this thing is brewing. And by the way, the same thing is being reported in Parkinson's disease. People who didn't realize that they had long-term exposure to things like trichloroethylene and glyphosate and Agent Orange and, you know, and on and on and on, things that are inhibitors of complex one, especially. These are things that increase your risk for Parkinson's disease. So these things are brewing for years. And if we're aware of them before they actually make major impacts, you only get the symptoms late in the disease. And again, that's another part of 21st century medicine that's not emphasized enough. What we see as disease is the end stage of a chronic process that's been going on for decades. The good news is, and as Mark has championed for years, we can now check these things. We can check these diseases before they strike us symptomatically.
Our lifestyle choices today are extremely important variables that are clearly connected to our brain's destiny. Taking an active role in improving the health of our brain can help prevent some of the most debilitating chronic illnesses we face, such as Alzheimer's, dementia, and Parkinson's disease. Thank you so much for tuning into this mini episode of the Broken Brain Podcast. I hope you not only enjoyed it, but you also got a massive dose of hope for this disease that is literally listed as one of the scariest diseases that a human being could get, that people have so much fear for. We don't need to have fear. We need to take action today to start not only investing in our brain, but our body as well. And I hope that this mini episode and the experts featured in it gave you the inspiration that you needed. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a review for the podcast or shout out our guest and featured experts on social media, Dr. Lisa Moscone, Dr. Dale Bredesen, and Dr. David Perlmutter. You can find their social tags in the show notes below. Thank you again, and we'll see you next week. Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Just a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not, I repeat, it's not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or otherwise qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Provider database. It's important that you have somebody in your corner that's qualified, that's trained, that's a licensed healthcare practitioner helping you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.